As you can see, I'm not Lainey Brackman, who is in your book. I'm here speaking for Lainey Brackman. She was unable to be here today and was really regretting it a great deal. But I'm glad to be here and present this talk. I have no relationships to disclose. I was the principal investigator on this. It was really two studies, so I'm going to really kind of go through this kind of quickly. And we have a publication out. It's not changing. Oh, there we go. We have a publication that'll be coming out that has the details of the first study. So I'm going to refer you to, if you want, complete details of the qualitative study. I'm a clinical psychologist at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, an assistant professor there in the College of Public Health. I'm a tobacco researcher and a clinician, and have been involved in doing this for about 10 years or so. This grant was supported by two NIH, or these studies were supported by two NIH grants. I'm going to brief background and significance here, briefly go over the formative research and the survey instrument development, and then present some selected results, and then we'll talk about the implications. For those of you who don't know about the Arkansas-Mississippi Delta region, there's a very high proportion of lower income and African Americans in that region. The prevalence of smoking is upwards of 30%. Death rates from tobacco-related diseases in this region are 2 to 3 times that of the national average. And there's also an extremely low utilization of state-funded tobacco cessation counseling services, particularly the Quit Line. This is despite the fact that there are some targeted marketing campaigns in Arkansas that there were at the time that were trying to reach African American folks in particular. And this kind of just illustrates that just the heart disease death rates. Where we're talking about here is the dark red stripe up along the Mississippi River there. In general, African-American folks seem to contact quit lines at rates proportional to the population, and you'll find this in some of the literature there. But there is speculation in the telephone counseling literature about lower income and minority groups. I know when we had the quit line here, when I looked at the data, the African-American folks who were calling the quit line, it was proportional to the population in Arkansas, but they had higher educational levels and equal incomes to the white folks who were calling the quit line. Well, that's not the way it is in Arkansas. The educational level of the African-American folks in Arkansas is dramatically lower than the white folks in Arkansas. So we're not reaching that population that is, I think, more in need of these services. And there's very little literature about how to access these folks. We have some anecdotal lessons learned how to reach minority folks, mostly from California. We decided to do some community-based participatory research because we really wanted to get an idea of what was going on about utilization of free tobacco cessation services from the community's perspective. We developed some community partnerships with them, developed the question, developed some target areas. We also used a democratic deliberative approach. In that approach, we worked with the community partners to deliver the focus groups. There was no university presence at the focus groups. The two counties we selected to focus on were Cross and Lee County. And you kind of look, if just to scan this, you can see the income is half that of the United States. We have a high proportion of African American folks, and particularly in Lee County, but you know, twice to three times as many folks living in poverty in these areas. The results from this formative research showed that we had 268 participants. Well, we were just thrilled for a qualitative study to have that kind of end. But after we compiled the comments, and we had the barriers that were identified were lack of knowledge about the quit line, lack of trust in providers, also concern about being exploited, and several aspects that we kind of grouped under root causes, or actually the group group them under what they call root causes, which was a lack of desire to quit, concern about getting sick if you did quit, and a belief that God will play a role in when and how to quit. So we took these ideas and went back to the community and developed a survey with our community partners, and then tested that survey on a set of about 80 folks, made some revisions, and had our pilot survey. The survey was designed to test the intensity and frequency of these identified barriers. Well, we could have these barriers identified by some folks, but we really didn't know if what level they were. We ended up administering the survey to 799 Delta residents, 90% of whom were from Cross and Lee counties. The survey question content included knowledge and trust items, right? Knowledge about the quitline, trust in programs both inside and outside of the community, concern about something bad happening if they did use the quitline, concern about providing personal information over the telephone, confidence, motivation, knowledge about quitting, importance of reasons to quit and not to quit, concern about getting sick if they did or did not quit, and the degree to which they believe that God will provide the power and the best method to quit. Also, an important question, this ended up being a very important question, it was brought forth by our community partners, was telephone availability. Out of our 799 folks, we ended up having to put the current and former tobacco users together, and there are some good conceptual reasons for that, because former tobacco users are always at risk of becoming current tobacco users. But we got a lot of inconsistent data on some surveys, like I'm a former user, but I smoke one cigarette a day. You know, our definition of quit is not everybody's definition of quit. So we put those folks together, and we had some never tobacco users that, because we just administered it to community events and supermarkets and things like that. Differences really in African American white folks, but you can tell that there are some differences between never and current former users in income, and this is consistent with what we know about smokers. Smokers tend to have lower incomes. Okay, the results. We found out surprisingly that 35% of the current former tobacco users reported that they had no readily available telephone to use for the quit line. Now, having a telephone used for the quit line isn't just, I'm going to talk on the phone for a minute. For a quit line to be effective, it has to deliver multiple sessions over a period of time. We know that, right? Well, you have to have some privacy, and if you live in poverty and you have a go phone and you pay by the minute, this may just not be a feasible thing for you to do. 35% of our current former tobacco users said that they couldn't use the quit line. We also had very low levels of knowledge about the quit line, and this is despite the fact that Arkansas had about $2 million per year. Now, the population of Arkansas is about 2.8 million total. That's about the population of the Denver metro area, right? So $2 million a year spent to promote the quit line, and these folks didn't know anything about the quit line, right? Their overall mean was 3 on a scale of 0 to 10, and 31% of the current former tobacco users reported zero level of knowledge about the quit line. What we found out about confidence and motivation was that they seemed to be about as confident and about as motivated as other populations. So our qualitative groups thought there was a low levels of motivation, but we really didn't find that in the surveys. And this is not a clinical sample. This is just folks out there who smoke. They're not the people presenting for treatment. Not that that would be that bad of a level of motivation or confidence to have in treatment either. How much do you trust programs to help people quit? Current former tobacco users had less, significantly less than never users, but there was a moderate level of trust in, definitely some level or some room for improvement there, both in programs inside the community and outside the community. Have y'all heard of this, that not you know, not wanting to quit because you are afraid that you're going to be sick, right? Well, you hear about it. It's not rare, but you hear about it occasionally. And this seemed to be a pretty important theme there. That, that's the next slide. But I'll put that on hold for a minute. This fear that something bad would happen to you if you use the quit line. Now, this is rooted in, you got to understand the context. There's been hundreds of programs in and out of the Delta where people end up feeling exploited, right? And so there's a long legacy of just feeling taken advantage of. So you've got that context. So contact with the outside is kind of distrusted. There was a moderate level of concern about something bad happening if they gave out that information or engaged in the program. Okay, here we are with the health concerns. Worry about being sick, moderate levels of worry about getting cancer if they did quit. Now, some of this comes from, you know, naturally associating two events. You know, they see people quit and then they get sick. Well, they quit because they were sick, but putting those two things together is pretty natural. But concern or worry about getting sick if they did not quit was a little bit higher than worry about getting sick if quit. But, you know, that's a pretty moderate level of concern about worrying about getting sick if they did quit. Very strong beliefs, faith-based beliefs, in both making the decision to quit and in the best ways to quit, right? There were just a couple of differences between African-American and white former tobacco users, with African-American users reporting significantly more desire to quit and having significantly less trust in programs outside the community. There were a lot more differences in higher versus lower income current former tobacco users, with the higher income folks tending to fare better on some of these factors, you know, in terms of the likelihood of quitting. And note the split here, the 50-50 split in the population was at $15,000 a year. There were a few interactions where the overall theme in the interaction is that income seems to play a different role in the white community than the African-American community. So if you look at confidence and ability to quit, the higher income white folks had a significantly higher confidence than the lower income white folks, where there was no difference in the African-American population. Very similar situation with importance of quitting, where income seems to have an effect there with the white folks, but not so much with the African-American folks. Same situation here, and a similar situation here. See, there's really no difference in the income with the African-American folks. And trust in programs outside the community. African-American folks of higher incomes had significantly less trust in programs outside the community. But you can see what the directions are going in opposite directions between the white and the African-American folks. So the implications here is that we can't assume that minority and lower income groups have the resources to use the quit line or are listening to the media messaging. They need to have some other options. We need to also pay attention to what kind of communication and messaging we're providing. If you don't have a telephone to use, you may not be listening to about a treatment program that's delivered over the telephone. Now, they may have been exposed to the messages, but if you don't think it's for you, you're not going to remember it or recall it. Levels of motivation do not indicate there's no or a low desire to quit there. These results suggest that we really do need to address issues of trust in recruiting and treating tobacco users from this and similar communities. One of the suggestions made in the first portion of the research by the community was to have a community facilitator, somebody who was there to kind of meet and greet over the telephone with the folks. And also special training for the tobacco treatment specialists in how to develop trust in these communities and be culturally competent. Also, what these results tell us that there is an important role for spirituality and faith in this community and perhaps other communities like this community, both in the decision to quit and in the role that God and prayer and faith are going to play in the treatment down the road. Communication and messaging also may benefit from partnering with faith-based organizations in a context like this. Income is also associated with more significant differences than race, and income associated with more differences in whites than in African Americans. That's what I got.
Do we have some questions? Yeah.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question? As long as you're up. How did they recruit the women to sit down and actually take the, you know, the cartoon or whatever?
Care, we were interested in targeting caregivers. That's another important thing, not just parents, but
So you had screeners and you screened them before they started the program. Yeah, it's a great idea. Oh, you could. So it was it's tailored. Not at all.
Some of these regions and the groups that you all were talking about, because we think you can do this with a house. We think you can do
Yes.
It's not tailored so that we can do that to that degree, but the there's actually a control group and they don't get any messages. The control group just has access to the regular plain website, generic, and actually the control physicians and dentists or nurses or hygienists actually just give them like a prescription to go to this website. They don't even do any email. So the emails are only generated for those that are randomized to the intervention group. But we don't have the ability, and we've talked about that, and maybe in another grant. We would like to tailor it even more and do audience segmentation to that degree.
Do you have a response rate of how many that are prescribed by the doctor?
I can't actually tell you off the top of my head.
Is it fairly?
So we're in the middle of a study, and right now we're not seeing a big difference between the control and intervention as far as referrals go. We have not yet started measuring quit rates.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question because actually the physician practices behave very differently from the dental practices. And we actually appoint someone in the office called an implementation coordinator. So for the physician practices, they engage other nurses, sometimes it can be just the physician, but most of the time it's more nurses. But we have a harder time training them. They break appointments. They are multitasking when we're trying to do the training for how you do enter the emails and get them on the web. But they are referring more patients. The dental practices usually only assign one person, and that's the hygienist. And they will tell you an appointment for when they can do their training, and they keep that appointment. And they don't refer as many patients, but their patient volumes are much lower. And when you have their attention, you have their attention. They're not multitasking like a busy physician office is. So it's been very interesting, those two different groups.
And did you like put like a tickler on the medical records or something? And you also, isn't your physician referral also?
Yes.
So yes. Do you have like
tickler? How do you? Them, how they implement it into their regular, it's implementation science, and how they implement it into their regular office routine is up to them.
Is up to them.
We give them tips and stuff, and we haven't yet measured that. But at the end of the study, we do go back and do a qualitative study to see how they implemented the program and what worked best. Right. The dental hygienist does seem to be in more control of their time, and their patient interaction is one-on-one. So it's been very interesting to see how different the two groups mm-hmm. operate.
But what about yours? How do you?
I'm going to ask Steve Bonsberg, who runs our tobacco program, to respond. He's the administrator.
With the systems change approach, we do have some health centers, some hospitals that we work with very closely, and we do have particular little ticklers in the medical records that we've gotten that far with some of them. Some of them have implemented their electronic medical record systems that they're actually using today. It seems to be the most productive use of time is if we could just work with the physician with the two A's at R, as someone else referred to earlier. And have some type of a referral form that if someone is interested in actually quitting, that would be passed off to, say, the office manager or whoever's working
way.
And we actually even go as far as to write in the address, the specific address, so they don't even have to complete that and provide an electronic page and so forth. So, you know, there's a lot of
things. It's as painless as possible for that office and how it's going to work.
In the red jacket?
This is for the presenter from Florida. Towards the beginning of your presentation, I heard you say that there was an emphasis on prevention, but what I heard you describe for the rest of the presentation was treatment. What did I miss?
Well, the prevention, and I'll ask Steve to also comment on that, then we do very extensive training of the health professionals, and we do it through motivational interviewing in terms of how to interact, you know, with that individual who allegedly, you know, is a smoker. And all of our medical students go out, as I indicated to you, into the schools and into the various associations and other areas, you know, where they have to be able to talk about prevention on the front end as opposed to the back end. Steve, would you like to mention any other details in here? And I think we also have to mention, too, that not only do our medical students go out, but also our pharmacists, our pharmacy students. We have not been able to encourage the optometry yet, but our nurses as well as dental. So in their first year, they must go out for that experience. In addition to that, interspersed throughout the year is content that's given to them in lectures where they have to take a test. And that test, you know, documents, you know, whether or not they have the clinical, they're able to apply the clinical skills in terms of assisting others in terms of prevention and teaching others prevention.
Yes.
So the facilitators are you training facilitators like lay facilitators?
Yes, we do. We trained the facilitators, and they have a plan, a program, and we are hoping to get permission, you know, from the state to set up a certified program, you know, where we could do our own certification within the state. We also use very effectively community health workers. You know, those are people who are at the grassroots of a community, and they are some in addition. So those are grassroots people in addition to the other current and future health professionals that we train to become facilitators. And right now we have 125 in the state now.
The sessions
are 6 sessions? Yes, 90 minutes per each session. And again, you as that third week is a very critical week for us. You know, when we get that curriculum content suggests strongly, and we support that individual, and that's why I said we have to provide more social support. When you ask a person to quit, then you just don't leave it to them. You know, even with the NRT, we're trying to introduce and infuse some more activity at that third week. So 1 week later, when we start the process of being able to do the first survey, we'll get less relapse and have more success, you know, with them. And so far, as you can see, you know, from our data, in those just the 19 counties, the level of confidence, you know, suggests that there's no statistical difference. So the quality of the program is good, but we have to make sure we can continue to reduce the relapse rate. You know, while you're getting new entries in, we don't want them falling off the boat, you know. Thank you.